The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 95. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube, or join the mailing list at ronmckeefer.com to stay up to date with the latest guests and anything else that I have going on. This week, I have Rick Bruner with us. Rick is the author of Explosive Ergogenics for Athletes. It's a book I read recently. Did a fantastic job with the book. Thought it was something that I wanted to have him on the episode to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the concepts in the book, nutrigenomic ergogenics. We talk about, you know, kind of what athletes should consume, what they should not consume, you know, a little bit about the NCAA discussion and kind of, you know, how we can make a little bit more of an impact on the rules and regulations that the NCAA puts out. But, you know, great episode. Know you're going to get a ton out of it. Before we do, we want to make sure we recognize all of our sponsors: Sorinex.com, EliteForm.com, PlayUSA.com, as well as Ignition APG. Ignition's doing, again, some phenomenal things right now. They're just now finishing up a lot of their combine prep and pro days, and so who's who of who's training where. And, you know, what I love about this company is that they do so much, not just for the profession. They have, you know, a supplement line. They have a speed certification. They're coming out with a strength certification. But they also do tons in the community, and they're, you know, they're based in Cincinnati, Ohio. They, you know, they're putting on the Marvin Lewis. Obviously worked for Coach Lewis in Cincinnati a couple years back, and they're putting on his coaching clinic, which is just a, you know, it's a clinic for the community, just a great event. And they do this without, again, anything in return. They just want to do it to make an impact, not just in the immediate community of Cincinnati, but around the country as well. And so make sure you check out IgnitionAPG.com. Great company, great people. Definitely going to get a lot out of that as well. Lastly, you know, if you enjoy these podcasts, you'll enjoy a product that myself, Rob Taylor, put out. Strength-ondemand.com. Strength on Demand is a online archive of various strength and conditioning clinic presentations. What I love about it, again, created the product a couple years back where, you know, we just wanted to kind of basically have a central depository of clinic presentations that we've come across through the years. You know, we reach out to different coaches that are putting on conferences and, you know, and work out deals with them to be able to present the content on Strength-on-Demand. We put it up regularly, and there's several presentations there. So anywhere you have a internet connection, you can watch a presentation and sharpen the sword. And that's really what it's all about, is just finding time, you know, zapping time vampires and making it so that you can continue to get better as a strength and conditioning coach. And so, again, that's the whole motivation behind the product. It's very inexpensive for the value, and I know you'd get a ton out of it. So check that out, strength-ondemand.com. Know you're going to enjoy this episode. Sit back and take lots of notes, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, welcome back. Excited to have Rick Bruner with us. Rick is getting up early for us today and spending some time with us, and he's on the West Coast there, but we wanted to have him on the show. I just read his book, Explosive Ergogenics for the Athlete, for the Explosive Athlete, or Explosive Ergogenics for Athletes. Fantastic book, highly recommend it, and I appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Well, my pleasure, Ron. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, Rick, in the book, you spend like the first part of the book, first part, a couple chapters, talking about your journey, and so it's a real unique one, and, you know, I really want you to touch on the Russia trips early in your career, but you know, kind of talk about why you got into the field and what's kind of led you to where you're currently at.
Okay, sure. Well, I've been in the dietary supplement field for about 30 years now, but I started in around 1985. I started working, helped start a sport nutrition company called Champion Nutrition, which was based in the East Bay in Northern California. And some of the research that they had discovered was from Russia. So in 1988, I made my first of several trips to the Soviet Union and Russia. At that time, it was the Soviet Union still. The first trip I went on was with the National Strength and Conditioning Association, the NSCA, with a group of strength coaches. And we went to Bulgaria, and we also went to Moscow. Mm-hmm. Bulgaria, we saw the Bulgarian Olympic weightlifting team in Varna on the Black Sea.
And that's awesome.
We had some lectures and trained with them and saw their training protocols and whatnot. Kind of got a flair for that. And then I also at that visit, I was able to sit down with their medical doctor to talk a little bit about nutrition. It was kind of fortunate for me because I was the only guy on the trip that was really interested in the nutrition side. Everybody else was a strength coach that was looking more at the training side. So,
right.
I started in Bulgaria, and then we went to Moscow, and we attended lectures by experts like Yuri Brokoshansky and Nikolai Volkov and others that were there on that first trip. So I also was invited to attend a roundtable on restorative nutrition while I was there, which was great. I was the only foreign guy on the panel, which was cool. And they kind of wanted to know what we were doing, and I wanted to know what they were doing. And,
sure.
Of course, being the East Block, it was still pretty close, and recognized there was no internet back then.
Yeah.
So really conversing with people internationally was very difficult. You almost had to just go there. And aside from maybe just one or two people, I don't know a lot of people that actually went there and learned from their system. But I was fortunate that first trip. And then that same year, I was invited back to Leningrad, which is now St. Petersburg, to attend an international conference on sport biochemistry and nutrition. And so I attended that, and there were experts from all over the world, from especially the Scandinavian countries that are very good scientists, and the Russian group as well. So I got to hang around with them and talk shop with them a lot, and that kind of solidified my initial learning. I was a competitive athlete for many years. I threw the hammer in college and was an NCAA All-American in that, and so I was interested in athletic nutrition, not so much bodybuilding. Of course, a lot of nutrition even today is muscle building, bodybuilding nutrition. But I was looking more for nutrition for athletes. So I was able to, interact with them on an athletic mentality, basically, of what would help athletes in speed strength sports, for instance. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we've talked about it on the show quite a bit, having spent time over NFL Europe, and we adopted our kids from the Ukraine and spending time with your Ukrainian national team and on and on and on. I mean, it still blows my mind, how much you get exposed when you go out of the country for the first time, how much you expose yourself to kind of a global mentality and open yourself to the resources around the world in terms of strength and conditioning. It makes you a much better strength and conditioning coach, nutritionist, scientists, sports scientists, analysts, whatever you want, whatever that is, but taking that global approach, I can't encourage our listeners enough to get outside of their state, outside of their country and learn more. But in the book, you talk quite a bit about nutrigenomic ergogenics. Kind of what is the definition of that and why the need to kind of write a book about it?
Okay, well, the word nutrigenomics simply means nutrients that influence gene pathways. So it's relatively new in the science, but since we mapped the human genome a number of years ago now, researchers are now able to look at all of our genes and determine what things can turn them on and what things can turn them off. And we can look at things like in our environment, like our nutrition. We can look at our training. We can look at a lot of different things to see how those pathways respond. And so nutrigenomics is simply the nutrients that we consume, whether it's through our diet or through supplements, and how they influence our genes. And there are speed strength genes.
Yep.
There are endurance genes. And in fact, I mentioned that I had attended a lecture in Leningrad. In St. Petersburg, which is what it's called now, at the Institute there, it's one of their biggest and most famous sports biochemistry institutes. They're now studying genetics and their role in elite athleticism. So they're looking at very large pools of elite athletes and seeing what genes basically they have that make them who they are. And there is no one single magic gene. It's a collection of genes. Not everybody's the same,
right.
But there are some patterns to that. So we know that there are patterns for endurance athletes, and we know there are patterns for speed strength athletes. So once we know that, then we can take certain nutrients and we can see how they work in those pathways. What makes a speed strength athlete, for instance? So that part of it. And the word ergogenics is simply something that increases athletic performance. So that's basically that word. So, you know, nutrients that affect genes that affect athletic performance.
So when in the book, you make no bones about it that there's a lot of misinformation about out there right now, and where most of us as strength and conditioning professionals are getting a lot of this information, it's coming from sources in which, you know, it's very tainted. It's you know, there's a lot of money involved. What in the book? I mean, what was the passion and the motivation behind writing the book, and kind of summarize for the listeners the book so that they can, you know, go out and purchase it.
Well, I wrote it. I hadn't written a book since. Back in 1990 or so, I co-authored a book with Dr. Ben Tabashnik, who was a researcher with the Soviet Sprint Group, and we wrote a book on athletic training and restoration and whatnot. And so I hadn't written a book in a long time. The science has changed,
right.
And I used a statistic that since about 1950, nutritional science. Over half of the nutritional science published research has been just in the last 10 years. So from 1950 till now, almost all of it is now.
Right.
You know, and the reason for that is twofold. One is there's greater interest in the science and health and nutrients and athletic performance. And number two, because of the internet, researchers are able to communicate with each other across borders easily. I mean, I sent an email to an institute in Russia a few months ago. I got a reply in 2 days.
Yeah,
that would never have happened back in the 80s or even 90s. So it's really accelerated the research focus. And so I wanted to write a book that would educate athletes and coaches and medical staff on the new science and follow the science. I've always said that, you know, even when you design good sports supplements or health supplements, I do a lot of other work other than just athletic supplements now. But I always say you have to start with good science first.
Right.
Then you start with good ingredients, really high quality materials, and then you write a good formula. And those three things have to happen. And a lot of times they don't. And the reason why they don't is a lot of the nutrition, especially in the U.S., is big business. And so I always use the example of the science of nutrition and there's the business of nutrition.
Yep.
And a lot of times the business of nutrition gets in the way of the science.
No doubt.
So, you know, we want to make things that are yummy and tasty and things like that and chocolatey and delicious and all of that without really looking at their functionality. And then how we formulate, too, is very important. What ingredients we marry together to create the synergy is very important. A lot of times that's lacking too, because people that are designing them just aren't trained, they aren't prepared to do it, and they're not really following the accurate science. There's some good things that come out, but a lot of things are just not that great. Most of them are commercialized. A lot of products are made for the masses,
right?
And then they're adapted to the athletics. So there's a lot of, you know, flavored drinks and things like that. Not to take away from them, but you know, when you should use them, when you shouldn't. It seems like everybody that's selling them wants you to use them all the time. And timing is everything in nutrition, too. So I design things for specific functions at specific times with specific training loads. And that's how I do mine.
Absolutely. Well, the nutrition part of it has to be planned out every bit as much as the training part, for sure. With that, you know, when you're working with your athletes, you know, you go into the book, you know, about there's specific things that you should be doing and taking, and there's obviously specific things that you should be avoiding as well. Talk a little bit about what we should be telling our athletes that they should be taking for an explosive athlete, you know, in an off-season type of program. And then what are some of those things that they should be avoiding?
Okay, well, in the off season, you're building a proper foundation, and you're hopefully advancing the skill and ability of the athlete. And when you get into the competitive season, a lot of times, like sports like basketball and whatnot, you're just trying to hold on and stay healthy.
Yeah.
You know, so the off season is a really important period to build an athlete, to evaluate the athlete, to make adjustments, and so timing is, like I mentioned before, timing is everything with nutritional supplements. So you have certain phases of the day or the workout. Now you have pre-workout, you have the workout itself, and then you have post-workout restoration. I am big on primarily post-workout restoration. I don't like to give a lot of things before the workout, and I don't like to take things during the workout.
Mm-hmm.
Very often. There's only one supplement, one that we have developed, which is called MyoSync. Is taken prior to a workout, but its specific function is to increase neuromuscular response. So the nervous system working with the muscles to fire explosively.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I don't add anything. I don't add any carb drinks. I don't add any vitamins or electrolytes or anything like that, especially as a strength athlete. It's just not necessary. A lot of times, too, it's counterproductive. I wrote in the book about a section called, we discussed nutrients called disadaptive nutrients.
Yep.
Okay. And I've never thought about it before. Again, I've been in the industry and working with athletes and coaches for 30 years and never really even thought about it myself. But looking at the new science, because this is all new science, it's now being discovered that there are certain nutrients that actually prevent the athlete from adapting to their training load. And so I kind of trace that back as to, okay, well, what are these nutrients, again, nutrigenomically, what are nutritionally are they doing to the gene pathways and the restorative and anabolic responses
that
counter what you're trying to do in training? And what happens is, once you understand what training does, training is a stress, okay? I call it a functional stress. If it's programmed correctly,
sure. It's
functionally stressful. The body adapts, the athlete adapts to it. They improve again and again and again, repeat, 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 okay? So when you introduce a nutrient that counters that, then you have to say, well, what is the training itself doing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, training, when it creates a stress, there are certain stress signals that stimulate the body's adaptive response. We now know that those stress signals are things like reactive oxygen. The common name for that would be like free radicals,
mm-hmm.
okay? Inflammatory proteins, they're called inflammatory cytokines, okay, heat shock proteins, hypoxia, oxygen debt, those are all signals that stimulate the adaptive response. Well, if you take certain nutrients, like I'm not a big fan of like vitamin C or vitamin E or N-acetylcysteine generally, because those things are really antioxidants, and knowing that the free radical pathway in a certain zone is designed to stress the body, to signal it to adapt. When we introduce those in a training plan in excess, or like a pre-workout thing, drink with stuff in it like vitamins, and everybody, a lot of companies want to add vitamins to everything, vitamins and minerals to everything they make.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of that either, and I think the form of the vitamin and the mineral is very important too.
Sure.
A lot of times they're kind of canned formulas.
Yeah.
They buy it from somebody as a premix, and then they add it, and it's on the label. Okay, but these things like C and E and acetylcysteine, maybe folic acid, other things, it can be beneficial at certain times, but in general, they blunt the adaptive response. So I tell my athletes and coaches, be very cautious of using those things, and watch, read the labels, watch what you're getting, because if you get a bunch of this, I would rather get my C in other words, from a natural source like a kiwi or an orange or something
right. Like
that, or orange juice, and just enough, to prevent scurvy, okay, than to try to tweak and ruin the adaptive response. And this has been shown scientifically in a number of studies now. That's a big problem. So
sure.
that's the disadaptive. Those are the disadaptive nutrients. So I don't know if there's any other part of that question.
But, no, well, maybe expand a little bit more on what, you're talking about, what you give post-workout then, what were some of the things that you would recommend coaches recommend to their athletes for them to take post-training?
Okay, so that's the most important period, actually, because mm-hmm. you stress the body, And it's now going to transition into an adaptation phase, a restorative phase, okay? So that phase can takes about 30 minutes to an hour, okay? So you're still in catabolism. When you're training, you're creating a lot of cortisol, stress response. Cortisol is important, too. It's another signal, okay? So you're creating this environment for functional stress. And now you want to restore and you want to start adding in some nutrients and things that can assist in that restorative adaptive process. In that period, basic things first, okay, like whey protein. That would probably be my first choice by far. There is a new concept now. It was coined by a researcher in England. His name is Michael Rennie. He's a very, very good scientist. The concept is called muscle full. And what he looked at was how much protein, like whey protein. Whey is nice because whey has about, in a 20 gram serving of whey, there's about 10 grams of essential amino acids. Those are the amino acids the body can't manufacture itself. So it needs to get it from foods or supplements. So about 10 grams is important, is in whey protein. What he found was that about 20 grams of whey protein is really the ceiling for the adaptive growth response. And an additional protein is really not any more effective. And the reason muscle full is the muscle can only handle the protein building process in the muscle, building enzymes and other proteins in the body as a ceiling. Okay, so adding more to it, it's not the rate limiting factor anymore. So adding more protein into your diet is probably not going to help.
Now,
I
at that point.
Maybe take exception to that a little bit intuitively. If I had a big athlete, like an NFL lineman, that was like 300 pounds, I'd probably give him 25 grams.
Just
a bigger dude. But in general, 20 grams is enough. So a lot of these weight gain powders or protein powders or whatnot that have these laundry size scoopers that want you to put 40 grams or something there, no. Cut it down to 20. Do it more often. Now, the other thing is that protein, when you take in protein like that, you can't take it the next hour or the next hour or the next hour. The body doesn't need it yet. Okay,
right.
So about a three hour gap. So every 3 hours you can introduce additional protein and it will be functional. So and that protein could come from a chicken breast. It could come from another drink of whey protein powder or some kind of a functional drink. Any kind of a protein every 3 hours would be okay to do, and it could be very functional to do that.
Sure.
In addition to that, other basics like creatine, creatine has been around a long time. I was surprised that a lot of athletes don't use creatine still, and I am a big fan of it. It's got a lot of great science behind it. I first learned about it in the Soviet Union during my second trip in 1988.
Before most of the research came out,
When I came back, I added it to a product, and then all of a sudden, the industry started picking up on it about 1990, and it took off. So
that was a neat story.
But creatine can be very useful, too. Again, I'm not a big fan of loading. I think, maybe 5 grams, 10 grams or something on a consistent basis. The body needs it. The body's receptors will like it. You may want to cycle it in and out a little bit. Would be fine, too. And so the body doesn't get so used to it and adapt to just you giving it the goodies.
And you're saying post workout
product,
and you're saying post workout.
Yeah, well, I don't think that creatine. You could take it just about. You can take it later in the day or a few hours before your workout. I just don't think the creatine before a workout is going to do anything.
Sure.
Right before. So these things that are pre-workout things that have a lot of stimulant stuff in them and creatine and whatnot. I don't see physiologically that great of a benefit. Maybe psychologically some, but. Physiologically, no. So creatine and then fish oil. I really, for years, I've recommended a good quality fish oil with high in EPA and DHA for my athletes. Fish oil is part a very important part of cell structures and the neuromuscular system. And so it's very important. We don't get enough of it in our Western diet. And so our cells are a little more rigid.
Right.
Our cardiovascular system is more rigid and whatnot. So fish oil is a good adjunct. It's also anabolic. There's been some studies showing that it increases anabolic activity too. So that's the phase in post-workout is the anabolic phase. During the workout, I mentioned that one product, MyoSync.
Yeah.
It is for And it is for amplifying speed strength traits, things like vision, reaction time, quickness, striking power, those type of explosive events. Fine motor skills works great with fine motor skills as well.
So what's the science behind that? How is it targeting that specifically?
Well, it works in the neuromuscular junction. It's where the nerves basically communicate with the muscles and tell them to fire explosively.
Okay.
And so if you don't have good connection there, it's kind of like the neuromuscular junction would be like a spark plug. The nerves and the muscles don't actually touch. There's this little junction here, and the choline has to be in there, and there's a couple of some other nutrient things that have to be in there to make this thing fire. And that's like the spark plug. So if that isn't there, there's no muscle fire. So we use it with only very explosive training, like shock method training, like box jumps, maximal lifts, maybe overspeed work, things like that, that are really going to require greater recruitment of muscle fibers. But it also helps with learning. We've been doing studies on it for quite a while. I started studying it a number of years ago. I studied it first on college baseball players and soccer players and then some NFL football players to kind of see how it would work. And it works very well. With NFL guys and Major League Baseball guys and stuff like that, they might need to take maybe a little bit more of a dose, like a double dose, but to play with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. More is not always better with nutrients. I recommend starting with a lighter dose and then seeing how that, it's like one capsule, and seeing how it responds. You take it about half an hour before a workout, and that's basically it. But we've also found there's a great residual effect. There's an adaptive effect to it. So in other words, it's not just for that workout. We find that it has a compounding effect taken over time. You don't take it every day. You only take it on times when you're either competing or you're training with in a competitive kind of or an over-competitive environment. You know, training itself should be as tough or tougher than the competition itself.
Right.
I mean, it should be demanding a lot. So that's the time that you would introduce something like Milestone.
So you mentioned some products there, obviously whey protein, creatine, you know, MyoSync. I don't know where that sits as far as NCAA guidelines, but, you know, there's the big thing as far as permissible, non-permissible, right? You know, where do you sit? I mean, you know, obviously as a strength coach, you know, I can recommend whey, but I can't give it. I can recommend creatine, but I can't give it. You know, what do you think that we need to do to try to educate the masses or the powers that be that you know, we don't need to be given a bunch of carb-loaded, sugar-loaded, you know, drinks, protein shakes, just to be able to get to the protein level that we need to get to post-workout, you know? What do you think the steps are to try to knock down those walls?
Well, the first thing is the safety of the nutrient is paramount. I mean, we want to make sure that the athletes are protected from harm and they're doing things in a legal manner. So, you know, if it's on a banned substance list, that should be, go with that. And, you know, years ago, caffeine was on the banned substance list.
Yep.
And then they took it off. So there's no method to the madness sometimes as to what's on it or not. Certainly pharmaceuticals, a lot of them are on there. But as far as nutrition and things, I think the industry, I think the athletic community has kind of erred on the side of uber caution.
Sure.
And that's okay. I mean, and understanding where sources of material comes from. Sometimes sources of materials are tainted. I mean, years ago, I was a lot of attorneys would talk to me about doping and you know, nutrients in doping cases and whatnot. Because, you know, if you buy something from China or something like that, be very careful about what you're buying. You have to test it.
Right. Manufacturing processes.
Because the stuff is is tainted. It's added, things are added to it that shouldn't be in there. You know, as far as you know, clean, safe nutrients. I mean, the MyoSync ingredients are very calm. I mean, they're herbal and vegetable source. And from my understanding, looking at the ban list, there's nothing in it that would be on the ban list, and nor should it be. It's you know, it simply amplifies the training results, but. You know, how you influence somebody, what you can give athletes and whatnot. Just be very careful, you know, work with your medical staff and look at the list.
Yep.
And, you know, make the call from there.
Oh, that's great. Well, buddy, we end the show with some resources here. So give us the best piece of coaching advice you've ever received.
I think train for the sport. You know, be sport specific, because a lot of times, you know, as we grow up and we evolve as athletes, we read bodybuilding magazines and things, and not trying to be so distracted by what other people are doing, but train for your sport. Look at what muscles are involved in the sport, what neuromuscular responses are involved in the sport, and just train. You know, train for what you're doing, and be very sport specific.
Sure. Do you have a favorite quote, one that you use with your athletes, one that you live by yourself?
Well, scientifically, I just say, you know, use good materials. You know, I mean, I've always just told my athletes to buy good quality materials if they're taking dietary supplements. So on the supplement side, I would just say, you know, be cautious. Okay, probably even more than that, be cautious and don't believe everything you see or read or hear. Okay.
Sure.
Be aware and use your brain. You know, this is probably as much important in making you a great athlete as your muscles. And so, you know, use your head and ask questions. I mean, that's what I did. I went to Russia,
right.
Asked questions, got to know people, learned,
sure.
Came back. And some of the stuff I do today is even from that, the very beginning part of my trip in Russia. So
yeah, that's fantastic.
Ask questions and don't take everything on blind faith.
You know, I always say on the show that, you know, we worry about training the 6 inches between the ears as much as we do the 6 feet below it, you know, and that's definitely, yeah. I agree with that 100%. What about, you know, give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Well, you hit me with that. I don't have any specific app.
That's okay.
Old school, so apps to me are whatever, but I do a lot of science research, so I use medical databases and whatnot. The average person is not going to do that. I think it's more important probably just to kind of cruise around and there's so much on the internet now. Some of it's good, and some of it's not. And again, that's, you've got to, when I even do science research, I don't look at one paper or one study and make the call.
Right.
I may look at 200 papers, published papers.
Sure.
And make the call. Okay. So, you know, take a broad Russia's approach to what you're doing and learning, okay, and learn from some of these foreign researchers. I mean, there's some great ones in Scandinavian countries and Russia and whatnot, and there's books and education. And just read and learn and apply and over your career. You know, especially strength coaches need to. Young ones especially have more opportunities today than anybody else.
No doubt.
You know, us old school guys, we had to go there. Okay.
Sure.
You know. And now, you know, a lot of that's very accessible. Even there's YouTube videos, I'm sure, and things like that. So be a sponge and learn from a number of different directions. But then make your own call and don't go on just one thing. Do what makes common scientific sense, you know, and that's what I would encourage people to do.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, now we really appreciate you coming on the show and writing a great resource for coaches and, sharing so freely, man, and just a testament to who you are and how you do your thing, how you do your business, man. So I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it, too. Good luck to everybody.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.